you turn in your Bibles to Proverbs chapter 17. I'm going to look at verse 17 today. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. And rather than take this at its kind of surface level, earthly friends and earthly brothers, I guess this would be an extended application, if you will. I'm going to take this into the spiritual realm and do spiritual brothers, so to speak, and apply this to the church. So the topic would be brothers in adversity. Brothers in adversity. And clearly what Solomon has in mind is not business as usual in life, in which things are going well. He is speaking of situations in which things are not going well, and how do ties work in those times. It's clear that there is such a thing as adversity, and the question is, how do those ties that God has given hold up and work? I could say that certainly there is a natural tendency in difficult times to turn inward on ourselves and take care of ourselves. And this is a situation in which Solomon is saying, well, no, there is a reaching out in difficult time because of ties that God has given. And to attempt to apply this to church life in quote-unquote normal days, our extended life, you could say, our understanding of one another's settings occurred more or less naturally. There was a natural sharing. We have dinner together twice a week, and we would find out what was going on with one another. That natural sharing has been cut into a very small fraction of what it was. So when we would have an extended time before and after services, in meals together, and you could see body language and so on, almost all of that is gone. It's not a natural, ongoing occurrence. Certainly, a friend and brother that Solomon is speaking of would certainly be natural, but he's also speaking in the context of God's covenant people. And God was taking Israel as his sons and daughters, as he says. And so it's certainly right for us to apply this to the church. Useful to take in a spiritual light, to look at the bonds formed by God in his church. The bonds that are given by God, that are given only in and by the Lord, and this is the topic, he's speaking of adversity, and are now tested and how are they tested. So that's the first point, is that clearly there is adversity, and Solomon is dealing with that, and it's right for us to consider how do we respond in the context of the church. The second point, really I would just like to look at a couple of examples, in this case Old Testament examples, of brothers formed in and tested in adversity, and the meaning and usefulness of such a thing. So Solomon is saying that there is such a thing, and that it continues all times and adversity. All times adversity. How does that work out? The first example I'd like to look at is David and Jonathan. Just as an overview, David and Jonathan made a covenant with David, we find, following David's killing of Goliath. These were not, as we might forget, two men of equal condition. We think of David as the greater, and we might think less of Jonathan. But Jonathan was a prince in Israel, and David was, you could say, a nobody. And what we find if we look at it that way, was that Jonathan is the aggressor, if you will, in the friendship and the covenant. And he was the one who, if you will, made the friendship and made it work. Secondly, this friendship was clearly in the Lord. This is not a mere human friendship. If we were to follow the actions and the motivations of Jonathan as we can find them in the scriptures, we would find that Jonathan is always found acting in faith. It is Jonathan who attacks the Philistine stronghold in 1 Samuel 14 with a statement that nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few. He attacks the stronghold, as stated, of the uncircumcised. He sees the great gap that there is between Israel and the Philistines. Israelites are God's people, but they are lorded over by those who are not God's people, and as he characterizes them as the uncircumcised. Jonathan is a man looking to the Lord at all times. David has the exact same outlook. If Jonathan goes to take an outpost of the Philistines without regard to quantity of people, he and his armor bearer only. David is doing exactly the same thing with regards to Goliath for exactly the same motivation. He says, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Not with emphasis on army, but on emphasis of living God, as opposed to uncircumcised. Uncircumcised versus army of living God. And so it didn't matter to him how many of him versus and other people went out against Goliath. It was God's people against the uncircumcised, and he was perfectly happy to go out by himself against Goliath. You hear this by many or a few. Same outlook. Thus, Jonathan's heart is knit to David by means of faith. So that's the beginning of that relationship. It's an unequal relationship. Jonathan is a prince, David just a guy. And Saul's, or Jonathan's father is not pleased, to say the least, with the friendship. Saul says, the kingdom will never be established, he says, as long as David is around, 1 Samuel 20. And as if to punctuate his outlook and remark, he throws a spear at Jonathan. Now, looked at from a human point of view, Saul's right. Samuel has anointed David king of Israel. So from the point of view of those who have that point of view in Israel, David becomes the king coming. And Saul becomes more and more delegitimized as king. So Jonathan is giving up the kingship by means of friendship with David. But this friendship does not wane with time. After David is forced out and on the run, and the men of Keilah betray him after he rescues them, Jonathan seeks him out, encourages him, and says, "You're going to be the next king. Even my father knows that," he says. Here is adversity, friendship in adversity, because of a bond of faith. Here is activity with regards supporting that friendship. It's not merely friendship from afar. It is an active help in great difficulty. David, if we know, remember what happened to the city of the priests when they merely helped David a little bit. They all got killed. So Jonathan was certainly risking much to go find David at that time. So there is a deep bond that is formed in such situations by those of like faith. What can we say about Jonathan's friendship? Well, as I keep reiterating, it's in the Lord. It involved a great coming down from a human point of view. It was, did he understand the difference? I think he did. It was, secondly, a great blessing to both of them. Not merely to Jonathan, not merely to David, to both of them. Here's David's words on hearing of the death of Jonathan. He says, "Your love to me was wonderful, surpassing the love of women." It was a bond that was formative for David. In some ways, it seems like it made David who he was. Unbelievers can see this. As Jonathan said of his father, even he knows this. They can see it, but not understand it, or in this case, even agree. It's the stamp of God. This is the Lord Jesus says, by this will all men know that you're my disciples, if you have love one for another. It doesn't mean that automatically they're going to be drawn in. He says, by this they will know. There is an imprimatur. There is a God-given stamp. It's a witness to them. It's a witness against them. This is something that God has given that is a reality. It's also a witness to us. We know we have passed from death to life because we love the brethren. What was it that drew David to Jonathan? Oh, he was a fine young man. No, no. He had similar faith traits. I care about the Israel of God because this is where God is. In the church, I care about these other ones because this is where grace is. In the second example, I said two brothers. This one is not brothers, but sisters. The second one is Ruth and Naomi. We have here at the beginning a potential parting of ways caused by disaster. Naomi's family had gone out to Moab when there was a famine in Israel. There, Naomi's husband and two sons had died. We don't have any circumstances given. And at this point, the two wives that have been taken by her sons, Ruth and Orpah, are left widows as well as Naomi. Orpah goes one way, Ruth the other. In Ruth 1:16 says, don't urge me to leave you, he says, for where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Jehovah, do to me, and more so, if anything but death parts you and me. So again, we say, well, with the strong bond that there is with Jonathan and David, is this the sterling character of Naomi that is drawing Ruth at this point? Naomi certainly was her link to God. But Naomi wasn't handling these changes well at all. This disaster was coming very near to her spiritual life. When they come back, she says, don't call me Naomi, that's pleasant. Call me bitter. Remember the waters of Marah, the bitter water that the children of Israel had to drink, and they couldn't drink it, and that was another occasion of their murmuring. Naomi says, call me Marah, call me bitter. The Lord has treated me in a bitter manner. Well, is this a good God or not a good God? Certainly the troubles are many and great. but she couldn't seem to get past them at that point. Certainly what Ruth had seen was in the midst of all of that someplace, she saw Jehovah. Not the sterling character, per se, of Naomi. Only the Lord enables this radical sticking to or cleaving that we see from Ruth at this point. We say, well, where else was she going to go? Well, Orpah went back home. You presume that Ruth could have gone back home. We find that sentiment in Hebrews chapter 11. We were speaking of them all looking forward. Paul says, they could have all gone back home. Abraham could have gone back to Haran. After all, he had relatives there, even relatives who knew something about Jehovah. This going on in faith, going on in faith with them, going on in faith with them is crucial. Ruth could have just said, well, I'll go back to what it was like a few years ago. She could not do that. Prospects were bleak outwardly. Here were two women, two widows, with winter coming. If you think about the remainder of the story of Ruth, this is harvest time. After harvest is winter. They had prospects of not much. We see a similar outlook with the disciples toward the end of Jesus' ministry. Jesus is up in Galilee and he hears about Lazarus being sick. And then Jesus finally decides to go down south to Judea to visit Lazarus. Well, they knew that it was hot for Jesus in Judea. And so they look at one another and they say, let's go die with him. John 11:16. Let's go die with him. They could have said, well, we'll stay here. You go tend Lazarus. We'll cheer you on. Let's go die with him. And in a certain sense, that's what Ruth was doing for all she knew. So there is an in spite of outlook toward one another in the body of Jesus Christ, the church of Jesus Christ. This is where God is. How do we maintain that outlook? Well, for one thing, as the apostle says in Hebrews 2:1, don't let slip what you've heard. And this is a repetition that I hope you're getting tired of hearing, but we all need to hear it from one another at this time. He says, don't let slip what you've heard so that it becomes unproductive. What does that mean? Well, our outlook slips more to the level of natural man. As we read in the first psalm, we begin to stand in the path of sinners, sit in the seat of scorners. There is no dearth of other voices out there. they may be patriotic voices, they may be scientific voices, they may be technical voices, whatever. But for the most part, they are not godly voices. So that we don't lose the sight of that which is real and a binding, adhering force. We need to ask ourselves, what is my input? Even, what is the preponderance of my input? When I have other input, am I able to judge it from a godly point of view? Or do I just kind of take it in as information? What is the level of my concern for other brothers and sisters? And is there a level of activity that is true for me toward them? Ruth clings to Naomi. Jonathan braves his father's murderous wrath to help David time and again. A brother is born for adversity. Now, I don't know how much longer this is going on, but we may not presume we must live today. A brother is born for adversity. What is our response to adversity toward one another? And our level of response to spiritual things. Let's close in prayer.